This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
Because what we do so far is we sit and then we ask somebody to come and help us. And that somebody comes 6 months, 9 months later. Yes. But that time, every livelihood is depleted.
That's Deli Babendi, chairman of the African Union's insurance company, on efforts to bolster support for countries during disasters. Details coming up also. Five people were killed, including three Ebola workers, in an attack overnight in Biakato, Eastern DRC. And the UN says up to 250,000 people have been affected by heavy rains in Djibouti. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, more violence has hit the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, hampering the fight against Ebola and raising concerns of a resurgence of the deadly disease, just as hopes were rising that it was being brought under control. The World Health Organization says five people were killed, including three Ebola workers, in an attack overnight in Biakato. One of the attackers was also among the dead and two others were captured. A health official said warnings had been posted earlier, demanding that the health workers leave or face the worst. WHO already pulled out 49 Ebola workers, and UNICEF relocated 27 as the security situation in the volatile area has worsened over the past week. The most recent outbreak of Ebola has been plagued by problems from the start. It's an ongoing conflict zone that also is an opposition stronghold, raising suspicion over any government intervention. Tracking people infected with the virus is critical, but many communities are no-go areas, and outbreaks of violence have forced health workers to stay indoors several times. There have been 3,003 cases of Ebola, including 2,199 deaths since August 2018. The WHO declared the second largest outbreak an international emergency in July of 2019. The African Union is urging African countries to join its insurance company so they can help support people who lose their properties in disasters. So far, the AU's African Risk Capacity has 30 member countries, but only 9 have joined and agreed to contribute to the insurance company. Eugene Wimana has the details from Kigali, Rwanda.
For the African Union, the spirit of self-reliance includes assisting thousands of Africans whose belongings disappear in disasters. Compaoré Antoine is from Burkina Faso. He says when things go terribly wrong, long waits are the rule for desperately needed external aid. He says, before asking someone else to help resolve your problems, you have to develop internal solutions. Why don't we have an internal fund that can be fed by African countries to address the continent's emergencies instead of always looking outside? According to African leaders, the truth is that countries really need assistance and can't afford to cover all their losses linked to climate change. El Elim Salim is Sudan's Minister of Finance.
According to our resources, it is we don't have so much resource to cover all this. But by joining the ARC, I think we could find more resources. The African Development Bank said that he can finance about 50% from this, and I think it is very good for us.
The ARC was established to tackle the impact of natural disasters. In 2013, its assurance company was established to provide coverage for climate change-related damage. But the problem is that only 9 African countries have subscribed to contribute. Dele Babande is the chairman of ARC Limited.
Because what we do so far is we sit and then we ask somebody to come and help us. Uh-huh. And that somebody comes 6 months, 9 months later.
Yes.
But that time, every livelihood is depleted.
Uh-huh.
Gambia, Senegal, Mali, Rwanda, etc. We put our forces together. Because if we are many, it's exactly like a tontine.
Uh-huh.
Everybody put a little bit in the common box. If something happened to one or two, you have enough to give to that person. Because not everybody has the problem at the same time. So this insurance is a mutualistic type, is solidarity based with the Pan-Africanism spirit.
Since 2014, ARC Limited had disbursed $36.8 million to support more than 2.1 million people whose livelihoods rely on agriculture. For instance, Senegal received $16.5 million for food distribution and subsidized sales of animal feed. Mauritania got $6.3 million for food distribution to families in food insecure areas where livelihoods were hit hard in 2015. There is no fixed amount of money a country has to contribute. It depends on how much the things it can't allocate from the national budget. Eugene Uwimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
African parliamentarians have been challenged to enact laws aimed at ending hunger and malnutrition on the continent. According to the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO, Africa has one of the world's highest rates of malnutrition. African legislators are meeting in Kampala to discuss a draft model law on food security and nutrition in Africa. VOA's Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
FAO says 20% of African households still suffer from extreme food shortages, while 30% of the population is acutely malnourished. The hunger, especially in sub-Saharan Africa, has been largely blamed on armed conflict, drought and poverty. However, officials say there is a neglected link, the political will to fight hunger, especially by parliamentarians across the continent. Martin Chungong is Secretary General of the Inter-Parliamentary Union. He says it's high time that the legislators use their power to prioritize boosting of food security and fighting malnutrition. Antonio Curado is the FAO Uganda country representative. He says legislators should be the lead stakeholders in ensuring that Africa is free of hunger and malnutrition by 2025.
To meet this challenge and to realize the development objectives of Africa, we need to ensure cooperation is strong and strong partnership between multi-actors. The Parliament have a critical role in ensuring that people are able to feed themselves with dignity through your legislative, budgetary, but also oversight roles, and also an unequal influence of the public opinion.
Legislators are discussing a draft model law on food security and nutrition in Africa. The model law is to guide countries that aim to develop national or sub-national legislation on the right to adequate food and food security and nutrition. Rebecca Kadaga is Uganda's Speaker of Parliament. She said it is up to national legislatures to domesticate the model law in their home countries.
60% of arable land on this continent is not being used, so we ourselves are not doing enough to produce the necessary food. Now, you also have to commit yourselves to the implementation. I hope that when you go, you will not wait for the government to bring a bill to the house. But if you are convinced that the model is important for Africa, you should be able to move your own private members' bills. I think we need a concrete plan of action which could be put within the law.
Jacqueline Amongin doubles as Ugandan legislator and representative on the Pan-African Parliament. She wants African countries to fulfill the commitments made at continental level regarding fighting hunger and malnutrition.
There are different instruments that have been put in place by the different institutions where Uganda is party to, like the recent African Union summit gave a focus on nutrition, and the heads of states and the different leaders even formed the Leaders for Nutrition Alliance. So I would like to call upon the member states, especially my own country, Uganda, to look at the Malabo Declaration, whereby member states committed to committing 10% allocation to agriculture, because nutrition is a cross-cutting issue.
The SDGs aim to end all forms of hunger and malnutrition by 2030, but FAO is afraid many African countries are still lagging behind as far as progress on the implementation of the goal is concerned. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
The UN says up to a quarter of a million people have been affected by heavy rains in Djibouti, with the average amount for 2 years falling in one day. The situation is similar elsewhere in East Africa, where Kenya has reported 120 dead and 18,000 displaced by flooding and landslides. And parts of Somalia have been deluged. South Sudan has reported 70 dead and says flooding has hit refugee camps. Doctors are worried that diseases, especially waterborne ones, might spread. Zimbabwe's Vice President, retired General Constantine Chiwenga, recently returned home after months of medical care in China. The man who led the 2017 coup that forced out Robert Mugabe is far from the first government official who has sought outside medical attention. The ability to do that has linked quality health care with the elite, while most people are left to rely on a failing system. Reporter Kuzaiza Nawash has the details.
Social media has been awash with pictures and videos showing a lively and fully recovered Chiwenga. His condition speaks volumes about the attractions of foreign health systems for those who can afford them. Political analyst Rashid Mukundu explains Zimbabwe's health sector.
It's true that our health system in Zimbabwe has virtually collapsed, and not only have we lost experienced medical staff, but we don't have equipment, we don't have medicines, and essentially the whole sector is in dereliction.
Chiwenga's return comes as public hospital doctors mark 3 months of staying home, saying they can't afford to go to work as hyperinflation steadily erodes their buying power. Government has resorted to firing more than 400 of them, while once again assuring the public of progress in reviving the healthcare sector, which has been an unfulfilled promise for decades. Mukundu says this has inspired a trend.
There's now a status symbol attached to one's capacity to seek medical attention outside the country. And the vice president, among many other senior government officials, including the former and late President Robert Mugabe, are beneficiaries of taxpayers' money in seeking advanced medical attention outside the country.
He says the irony is that the same officials have a mandate to improve Zimbabwe's health sector, yet thousands of taxpayers die due to the failed health system. Karen Mukwasi is director of a non-profit organization called Economic Justice for Women Project. She says it's sad that women are bearing the brunt of Zimbabwe's failing health situation.
The doctors that were being paid by government to serve as patients at public hospitals are now doctors that you have to pay Forex, and it's not a small amount of money because they are now doing locum at private institutions. Women's health has been compromised. We talk about women giving birth.
In Zimbabwe, women are also usually the caregivers for their ailing and injured loved ones, a situation worsened by the lack of public doctors and the high cost of private health care. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashi from Harare.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Amnesty International says Egypt's crackdown on dissent is getting worse with repression hardening. It claims there is a parallel justice system to detain critics who are considered potential terrorists. The London-based rights watchdog issued a 60-page report yesterday. It cited the Supreme State Security Prosecution Service, known as the SSSP, as well as counterterrorism courts and special police forces. Amnesty said it had observed a sharp rise in cases prosecuted by the SSSP, which is comprised of just a few handpicked judges from 529 in 2013 to 1,739 last year. The report says concert-goers were accused of terrorism for waving rainbow-colored flags. A journalist charged with broadcasting false news was detained repeatedly for 3 years. A human rights lawyer was arrested for joining a protest he says he didn't attend. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo on Tuesday urged Egypt to respect freedom of the press days after Egyptian security forces raided the office of independent news website Mada Masar and briefly detained three of its staff. Africa's major economies, among them South Africa, Kenya, and Nigeria, have in the last decade enthusiastically adopted the most American of holidays, the shop-till-you-drop extravaganza, that is Black Friday. The event, which originated in the U.S. in the 1950s, on the day after the Thanksgiving holiday, heralds the start of the holiday shopping period and promises steep retail discounts. But in Africa, where Thanksgiving is not celebrated, Black Friday has taken on a life of its own. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
Forget Thanksgiving. In Africa, consumers are foregoing the turkey dinner and family drama. Instead, they are, in huge numbers, celebrating the bonanza that comes the day after.
The low price event of the year is finally here. Black Friday.
Today only. With up to 50% off. The world's biggest savings promotion is coming to
Marketing shop. Website Black Friday Global estimates Friday. That Black Friday sales are 1,331% higher than average day sales in Nigeria and 1,952% higher in South Africa, the continent's two largest economies. In Nigeria, the average Black Friday shopper spends about $60. In South Africa, it's just over twice that amount per shopper. South African economist Mike Schussler explains the logic behind this adopted holiday, which he estimates has been observed in South Africa for about a decade.
There's a simple reason for that is I think Black Friday has become a little bit of a worldwide phenomenon, particularly I think in countries where consumers are very much needed by the retailers. Retailers have had to entice consumers from their tight spending into the shops, and in South Africa and a few other places, the end of November is normally the time period when people get what we call their Christmas bonus or their annual bonus.
And the phenomenon is growing. First National Bank, one of South Africa's largest financial institutions, reported this week that its cardholders made more than 2.5 billion rand. That's a cool $169 million worth of purchases last Black Friday. And they expect to see a 16% increase this year. In the world of electronic commerce, Black Friday has been a game-changer, says Abdusalam Benzituni, a spokesperson for Jumia, a Nigeria-based e-commerce site that operates in more than 10 African countries. Black Friday, which Jumia started promoting in 2014, is now so big that it has eclipsed a single day, he says. He declined to give sales figures. He spoke to VOA from Kenya's capital, Nairobi.
Just last year, we had more than 120 million visits in our website. And this year we're expecting to have more than 150 million visits in our websites. It was one day, Black Friday, it was on Friday. Then we moved to 1 week, and now it's 1 month for us.
So what are African consumers buying? More or less the same stuff they are everywhere else, he says. Electronics, phones, televisions, clothes. But although many of those items are not made in Africa, this consumption binge, he argues, is a good thing for the continent. Many of Jumia's vendors, he says, are small, local African enterprises.
Imagine tomorrow if we have this African free trade market between the African countries, we can have like a seller from Nairobi who can sell directly to Nigeria or Ghana. Black Friday is just an opportunity to promote this e-commerce. So we are creating just like an infrastructure and visibility for a new digital economy.
Or maybe it's just a good day to get a sweet deal. Whatever the reason, in Africa, it's open season for Black Friday. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
The UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, has commended Somalia for signing a convention to protect internally displaced people, IDPs, in Africa. Somalia's announcement on Tuesday makes it the 30th African country to sign the Kampala Convention. Somalia has the fourth largest population of IDPs in the world. Mohamed Yusuf reports.
This week, Somali President Mohamed Abdullahi Mohamed signed the Kampala Convention that requires internally displaced persons be protected and given assistance in their daily struggles. Somalia is the 30th country to ratify the deal, which was adopted in 2009 by all 55 African countries. African IDPs face many risks to their safety and are often in need of humanitarian assistance. Gail Nuju Nekonkose is the UN Refugee Agency's Senior Protection Officer in Somalia. He says ratification will improve the welfare of Somalis who fled their homes.
It helps to promote and also to strengthen the regional and national measures to find solutions for the displaced person. The second aspect is also the fact that the Kampala Convention ratification established a legal framework to protect and assist properly the Somali displaced people. And lastly, I look at it from the angle of how it established a legal framework for solidarity, cooperation at regional level.
According to the Internal Displacement Monitoring Center, 10 million people in Africa were displaced in 2018. Somalia accounted for 11% of that figure. Somalia has long lacked a stable government. The fight against Al-Shabaab militants has led to more people fleeing their homes. Nekonkose says reaching those Somalis in need of humanitarian assistance has been a problem for many aid agencies.
So the same way that insecurity is affecting internally displaced persons, it also affects humanitarian workers from the all sectors that are trying to intervene in the areas. But I think most significantly, the government of Somalia is making the effort to ensure that humanitarian actors have access and to deliver on the assistance and the protection requests from them.
The ratification signed by the Somali government means it has to take measures to ensure the safety and tend to the long-term needs of IDPs in the country. Amnesty International researcher Abdullahi Hassan says Somalia has much to overcome to fulfill the commitment.
As long as this conflict continues, the situation of IDPs will be there. So that is one main challenge that Somalia needs to deal with. The other thing is, you know, due to these climatic shocks we have seen in Somalia, there has been constant famine and drought that was hitting Somalia, very hard in the past few years. IDP situation is likely to be there for a long time, and more IDPs will be created due to the droughts and the continuous conflict. But that should not be an excuse for the government, not to protect the rights or the livelihoods of IDPs in the country.
2.6 million Somalis are displaced, a number that could rise as a fight against Al-Shabaab rebels continues. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Patrick Dea, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports, Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.